Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Isabel Clement, and you're listening to the Wheel Suckers podcast.
Hi, I'm your Captain Alex, and I was raised on a tandem, and I'm an ex-cycling industry goof, and I'm with my stoker.
Jenny's Stoken here. I am the director of the London Bike Kitchen. I am the author of How to Build a Bike and also chair of the Women of Colour Cycling Collective.
Today, we talked to Isabel Clement about non-standard cycles, why saying bicycle is bayard, and listen to the Wheels for Wellbeing anthem with us.
Hello, hello. We have a guest with us in our studio in the ether. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So I'm Isabel. I am the director of Wheels for Wellbeing. But what else about me? I am in my mid-50s. I am French-born and I'm a disabled cyclist. I've been disabled all my life. And, well, other than my cycle, my hand cycle, I also use a car some of the time, a wheelchair where the environment is nice and smooth, and a crutch to walk a few steps as well. But my favourite mobility aid is my hand cycle.
I love your hand cycle as well. We'll have to share pictures.
I was going to say, for those who might not know what a hand cycle is, could you describe it?
Yes, absolutely. So my hand cycle is basically a three-wheeled so it's a trike, I guess, but it's not pedaled by with my feet. I use hand cranks, so I pedal with my hands. In actual fact, I sit in my wheelchair and I add to the front of it something called a clip-on hand cycle. It looks a bit like a unicycle, I guess, but it attaches to my wheelchair and it lifts me off the little front wheels of my wheelchair and I've become a trike user.
Oh, cool. So it's it's like an add-on. It's not a completely separate trike.
No, because what do you do when you get to the other end if you need your wheelchair?
Yeah.
And you've left it at home.
Yeah.
So if you're doing a circuit, I guess, and you come back home, you might not need to unclip in the meantime, but I prefer it as I don't have a one-piece hand cycle. They're big beasts and I've got nowhere to put one. So yes, I've got a two-piece wheelchair plus clip-on, and it's got e-assist. It's got battery on the front, and therefore the world's my oyster. I can do hills, long distances, and I love it.
That's amazing.
I'm just remembering the time when we went to go play around with some of the bikes. Sorry, I shouldn't say bike. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about.
Very good.
I just caught myself right now.
Very important.
let's talk about that then. So
yes.
A lot of people, we use the word bicycle when actually we should be saying cycle.
Yes.
And why? Why is this change necessary? Why do we need to update our vocabulary?
Super important. In fact, I'll let bike go. It's not so bad. Bicycle is the one that I really object to people using as a byword for cycle. So the problem with bicycle is that it is a very handy type of cycle, but it is definitely not the only type of cycle that can be used for getting about. And if we say You know, we're planning for bicycles. We're, you know, if we use bicycle as a byword for cycling, we are basically using what I would quite happily call ableist language, i.e. we're making it sound like the only way to cycle is to bicycle. So if we say cycling, cycles, we are being inclusive, and we're not confirming this sort of myth in people's heads that if you can't cycle a bicycle, you can't cycle, because that there's nothing further from the truth. So yes, there are all sorts of cycles. There are, as I just mentioned, hand cycles, there are tricycles, there are tandems, there are different types of all of those.
Recumbent
hand cycles, side-by-side tandems, wheelchair tandems, you name it, they exist. And I mean, I said I'm in my mid-50s, and I've been disabled pretty much all my life, and I never thought cycling was for me. My parents tried me on a bicycle when I was 10. That didn't work. Balance wasn't going to happen. My feet weren't going to stay on the pedal. And they only thought of cycling as being done on a bicycle for a kid and for anybody. And therefore, they never tried anything else, which is a real shame, really. I mean, it's okay. I discovered hand cycling in my mid-30s, but thank goodness I did.
How did you discover it in your 30s?
I was actually in the process of looking for a mobility scooter because I wanted to keep up with my child, who'd got his own little first bicycle. We'd got him his first two wheels, and he'd taken to it no problem. So I wanted to be able to take him and his bike to the park. But if I had, as we used to go to the park with me in the wheelchair, him on my lap and or toddling about alongside me, and that was absolutely fine. But once he was free on his two wheels, he would have disappeared up the hill down the other side, and I would have been stuck at the bottom of the hill in my wheelchair.
Yeah.
A little kid will ride quite happily across grass, uphills, downhills, etc. You cannot do that in a standard wheelchair. So I thought, I didn't think of a clip-on hand cycle. I thought, okay, well, either I give up taking my kid to the park, or I stop him having his bike in the park, neither of which was what I wanted to do, or I need to equip myself with another kind of aid to my mobility. And I started looking around for the right kind of mobility scooter, which in my mid-30s I really wasn't keen on doing. I didn't particularly think I was going to love the look of it, but hey, needs must. Luckily, it's actually quite complex to find the right, well, any kind of mobility aid. You've got to do a lot of research, really think it through, and mobility scooters are big, heavy things. How was I going to get it in the back of the car? All that. Did I need to change my car? Did I need a three-wheeled mobility scooter, a four-wheeled one, whatever? So in amongst all of that time spent researching and humming and ahhing about it, I came across a picture of a clip-on hand cycle. I can't remember where, but luckily I did, and then I got a rep to come and show me, and the rest is history, really. I discovered that actually I wasn't thinking of it as cycling at all, actually, at the time, but I could have better access to local parks and to green spaces and etc. By changing my wheelchair into a hand cycle, by just adding this thing on the front. I was lucky I could afford it, because these things are not cheap, but I invested in my first one. It wasn't e-assist at the time. It was still a grand and a half. So I started off discovering hand cycling without knowing, really. I just was able to, you know, access the hills, and I could go across slightly rougher terrain like grass or whatever and keep up with the kid. Then I got much more involved in Wheels for Wellbeing a bit later on, and I then started to realise that even though I had some kind of cycle, I wasn't really at all using it as others use a bike, as in I wasn't using it
like transport.
Yeah, exactly. It was just a leisure sort of, you know, mobility aid, in traffic-free spaces. And I would always drive it to the edge of places I used to feel okay using it, as I say, parks or very traffic light or traffic free environments. Then I became involved much more with Wheels for Wellbeing.
And for those listening who might not know, could you explain Wheels for Wellbeing?
Oh yes, really basics. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. So Wheels for Wellbeing is the organisation I run and I head, and it is a charity, and it is a cycling charity run and led by disabled people who cycle. It's a bit of a left field sort of organisation. As most people think disabled people can't cycle, they really would not imagine that they have such a thing as a disability cycling organisation, but there it is. That's Wheels for Wellbeing, and it is an organisation which does two main things. One, it's based in South London, and in South London it provides actual opportunities for disabled people to realise they can cycle. So it's a place where we have three places in South London where we hold a lot of those non-standard cycles I described earlier, the tandems, the trikes, the handbikes, etc., so that disabled people can overcome that first barrier that to cycling, which they experience otherwise, which is that they don't even know it exists, and they wouldn't just go and spend £1,500, £3,000, £5,000 to buy something that they may not be able to get on with, or they don't know that they'll be able to get on with, and they may have nowhere to store it. So people can come several times a week to our various venues to try cycling away from traffic, so we've removed that barrier as well, at venues which are fully accessible. So Wheels for Wellbeing does that as its first mission, as its first activity. And then we've been doing that since 2007. And then when I started running the organisation in 2011, I've come from a disability background and a sort of from the disability sector, and very sort of I take a very rights-based approach to the work I do always.
Rights-based.
So meaning that I look at. Through the microphone, over the ether. Yes.
I just want to get clear. This is like, social justice work. This is
social justice. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't look at what we do at Wheels for Wellbeing as a nice activity for nice disabled people. I look at it as basically removing the barriers, bringing back the right of disabled people to be physically active, to experience cycle and the thrill of it and all the benefits of it. It's not just a leisure, or I mean it is a leisure activity for plenty, but I don't look at it as it's enough to just provide it out of sight, out of mind. So we started actually being an organisation which is fighting for rights, the rights of disabled people to access cycling and practice it in as often as in whatever way they wish to do so. So we realised that people had no idea, one, that disabled people did cycle, and two, that that there were things that needed to be done to the cycling environment in order that disabled people be included, have the opportunity and the rights to cycle. And it's not about the person's body, it's not about their impairment, it's not about any of that. It's about has the cycling environment been provided in such a way that disabled people have equal access to it. So Wheels for Wellbeing is an advocacy organisation, and we see ourselves as the voice of disabled people who cycle.
Love it.
It blew my mind when I first learned about it, Wheels for Wellbeing, because I had no idea.
No.
And the cycling industry just doesn't really focus on that
or
showcase it enough. I catch myself saying bicycles all the time.
Sure.
And it's one of those things where you're like, I need to do better. And if you're a listener and you haven't heard of Wheels for Wellbeing, go check them out.
Yeah.
I like you said, Isabel, like people just think you have to ride, you know, you say a bike and everybody's mind just pictures a two-wheeled bike.
That's it.
I think so many people I know, able-bodied friends, will even say, I can't cycle and cycling's not for me and I can't ride a bike.
Yeah.
And I just think, yeah, there's so many other amazing ways to cycle.
Yeah.
But also, well, we don't create the environment to facilitate that. Like you said, like our infrastructure is not made for even people to ride bikes. Like it's people have to fend for themselves. So you can't, like, if I'm having trouble riding a bike somewhere, then you can imagine how like someone with a mobility or like a trike or something like that. I'm like, you're not going to fit through spaces or...
That's it.
That's another question is, so what kinds of changes need to be made to infrastructure to make it more inclusive, make sure everyone can ride?
Yeah. So, in a way, it's very simple, it requires rethinking how we plan for cycling. But the main thing is back to, we need to stop thinking about the bicycle. So instead of teaching engineers that they have to cater for the geometry of the bicycle with a so two wheels and a slightly wobbly person on top of it, which is what they've been taught for decades to plan for, we need to equip them to understand and to plan for the widest, the longest cycle with the widest turning circle, etc. And then if they do that, then all of us can cycle in comfort and hopefully in safety with a bit of protection, etc. But the main thing is to start thinking about cycles in the widest possible sense. And that doesn't just help disabled people who cycle non-standard cycles, as we call them, but it also helps sort out the issues which parents experience when they're wanting to cycle with little children, whether they've got them in a trailer behind them or in a cargo trike or a cargo bike, or the little child is cycling alongside them for a bit more safety. That's wider than just one bicyclist. And also then on from that also solves the problem of the white vans on our streets. You know, if more gear, more stuff can be moved around by cycle, because, again, trailers, cargo bikes are totally available and they can move amazing amounts of stuff. But if the infrastructure is not wide enough for those wider cycles, longer cycles, heavier cycles to cycle in safety, then we stay with, oh, well, I have to use a car as a disabled person, or I have to use a car as a parent, or I have to use a car or a van as a trader. So by rethinking, by thinking beyond the bicycle, by thinking about what now government in its own guidance calls the cycle design vehicle, the cycles with the widest and longest measurement, then we're geared up for all sorts of people to cycle, and also we're giving a much more forgiving environment for people. You know, if they are a bit on two wheels and they are a bit wobbly, whether they're novice cyclists or they get distracted by something and they have a bit of a wobble, if we've planned for wider cycles, there's a bit more room for everybody to become a confident cyclist and not to be intimidated in the space. So width is definitely a huge part of it. You know, we want more protected cycle lanes, but again, if there's a curb or some wands or some armadillos or whatever on the ground to define the space for cyclists, it needs to be, you know, in giving us a wide enough amount of space along the lane.
And that's work that Wheels for Wellbeing does. Do you give advice?
Yes.
To planners, to city planners?
We do, and we have collated all our knowledge into a guide called The Guide to Inclusive Cycling, and that's available for free on our website. But better than that, we've also got ourselves involved with government with when they were reviewing the cycle design guidance, which is very sexily called LTN120.
So
that's what it's called. But the people in the know where to go to find it. It's on the government's website. It's basically, it was launched last July, and we were at the table when it was being reviewed. So we're pretty pleased with the result of, you know, we were able to influence that. So not only for that government guidance to be very much talking about the cycle design vehicle and telling people to plan for those dimensions, but also to talk about limiting camber, for example, or crossfall, whatever engineers call it, which is the way, you know,
the side of the road.
It's the way that engineers deal with drainage,
yeah,
often. So
that
road. Yes, a road is very rarely completely flat. It slightly curves towards the footway, either side of the roads, the carriageway, so that there's not big pools of water. Of course, nobody wants big pools of water on the carriageway. But if you use that too much, if you make your road too rounded in the up to the middle, most bicyclists don't actually realise that it's an issue. Drivers, obviously, of cars don't realise it's an issue. But tricyclists, anybody who cycles on three wheels. Oh, my God.
Me and my dad fell off.
We were on a
tandem tricycle.
Oh.
In Wales, we went to Tandem Mania. I'm sure I bring it up a lot. But
yeah.
But we were cycling on this road and the road was so cambered.
Yeah.
So we just kept falling off and we couldn't work out why.
Yeah, the only safe place in that case is in the middle of the road, which, of course, if there's a lot of traffic, is a bit of an issue.
especially rural Wales, you can imagine.
Yes.
Drivers
yes.
do not want to see a tandem tricycle in the middle of the road, which is the
yes.
only way we could, yeah.
Yeah.
Can
yeah.
I ask a question about, so a lot of the outrage in London about the LTNs by taxi drivers is they're using the disabled people excuse. Like, what if you have a disabled person that you have to deliver them straight to their doorstep?
Yep.
What do you make of this?
So it's very, well, that particular thing you're just mentioning, taxi drivers doing that, is extremely irritating, excuse me, but they are rarely the disabled person's friend in general as a profession. There are some totally lovely taxi drivers, but I have not yet met a single disabled person who doesn't say, taxi drivers, they never want to take us. You know, are you joking that they are our best friends suddenly? So they can just, stop that. But there is an issue. If there are a lot of disabled people who are extremely reliant on either their own cars or other people's cars to get them places, and door-to-door transport is crucial for a high number of disabled people. For me, I've realised that actually cycling is the issue, because I can cycle from my door to the door of my destination much more easily than I, for example, can use my wheelchair. And I get the exercise and it's far more fun. But a lot of disabled people are not equipped disabled people who find mobility along pavements difficult, or, you know, who need who cannot just walk down easily down to the bus stop or over to the tube station.
Or if there's a car parked on the pavement.
Yeah, all sorts of things. Basically, pavements. I mean, there will always be a small number of people who are either disabled people or people who are unwell, who have an illness or which is very complex and very extensive, who will need to be picked up right outside their front door and dropped off right outside the door of their destination, because they will not have the energy to do any more than that, and unless they can be picked up and dropped off right outside, they will not be able to do that journey. So that's a small number, but a real number of people. But for a lot of us, if we were equipped with the right mobility equipment, like, you know, proper active wheelchairs, proper outdoors, lightweight, very manoeuvrable wheelchairs, and there were some really good quality pavements, unencumbered, non-cluttered, not cracked, and not narrowed down by, yeah, cars parked on them or whatever, or driveways which make them like a roller coaster rather than the smooth surface. If all of that was in existence, then people, the majority of disabled people, even with mobility impairments, would find it okay to be able to walk or wheel, particularly wheel, a little bit further. And actually, it's good for us in terms of, you know, we are being denied the opportunity to be physically active, and therefore we're dying slowly on our bums. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's what's happening.
You called mobility aids or immobility scooters?
Mobility scooters, I call them immobility scooters, yes. Because you are sitting there and you're pushing a button. And as again, for a tiny number of people, that is absolutely the right thing and the best way to be able to be at least a bit outdoors, etc. But a lot of people would be able to cycle but we'll never have the opportunity so long as the prices are so high. They are extremely high. And also, it's so scary to cycle on the road. So it's a real sort of catch-22 with low traffic neighbourhoods. I've got a bit of a split personality on LTNs, and I'm increasingly loving them. But at the beginning, my disabled driver's heart was bleeding at the sight of all my shortcuts. I know London so well. People were saying, "Oh, have you done the knowledge?" You know, because I knew all the shortcuts, and I have now realised I've had to kind of reassess what I was doing. I was as a privileged driver, basically. I was taking my pollution, you know, the exhaust of my car all the way through people's residential streets where people live, and I was expecting to be able to cut through everywhere to avoid the traffic. And that, what else do you do as a driver? You like to avoid traffic. You don't like to sit there and take loads of time to move nowhere. So, you know, literally where I live in Lambeth, literally I'm on the edge of one LTN, that's the Streatham Hill LTN, and then all the way down to my work, which is the other side of Brixton, I've got the Tults Hill LTN, Brixton LTN, and I at first I was thinking, oh my God, you know, this is terrible, you know, all my shortcuts. And but what it's meant, because I'm equipped with my hand cycle, it's actually meant that I've actually been able to cycle way more. And therefore, particularly since COVID and lockdown and a lot less, you know, I've not been going actually to work very much to the office, been working from home. But therefore, I've actually done so little exercise. If I hadn't been able to cycle, I would have, you know, really started developing some new health conditions, like a lot of people have. And but what actually the low traffic neighbourhoods have done for me, one, it's when I do want to go back to the office, it's quicker and it's safer to cycle to work. But also, far more than that, it's enabled me to link up all the way up to cycleways, which had been there, which had been put in by TfL, Transport for London, or local boroughs. But I had none round me. I didn't have a superhighway, cycle superhighway near me. I didn't have a quiet way near me. All I had were, you know, very busy residential streets. And now, since this time last year, basically, I've started being able to go not only to my hospital appointments, either at King's Hospital in Denmark Hill or St Thomas's Hospital up by the river, but that's very occasional that I have one of those. But otherwise, in really enjoying going up through into central London, or out towards East London. You know, Greenwich. I've been to, you know, all
on
sorts
your bike.
Of places.
Sorry, of course. My God,
Jenny. It's okay. You can wash your mouth later. On my hand cycle, absolutely.
All on your hand cycle.
Absolutely. And that's been amazing. Instead of just sort of finding a few back routes just down to the other side of Brixton and back again. I never used to wander off and dare explore new places because I was really worried about traffic and not knowing the right routes. And now, with so many low traffic neighbourhoods everywhere, which I know are problematic for many other disabled people, but for me, they've been fantastic. So it's not, taxi drivers are not the people to advocate for us. We are quite able to advocate for ourselves, thank you very much. But we are, you know, disabled people are just like any other big group. We are very, very diverse, actually. But the majority of disabled people, like everybody else, don't realise they could cycle. And it's expensive, and it takes a while to reorganize your life and your equipment and the storage of your equipment, etc., to make it a reality for day-to-day transport.
Yeah.
So I will not say that LTNs are magical things for all disabled people. They're definitely not. They're not probably quite as dramatically horrendous as they are sometimes portrayed, but they will have created some issues for a number of individuals, and those issues need to be discussed and mitigated for people, because the last thing we want to do is to have better environments for active travel, which actually traps a small minority of people in their homes and makes them unable to travel anymore. So I think it's very much about local authorities, local neighbourhood groups, etc., having conversations, not saying it's all bad or it's all good, but, you know, really identifying local residents for whom it is an issue, preferably before putting them in. Saying, okay, well, how are we going to mitigate this? And it could be as simple as, you know, finally putting a cut curb to a junction where it's a dropped curb, where there isn't one, which is what stops the person accessing. I mean, I have a chemist, I've got a local chemist, which appeared, I don't know, about a year ago or whatever, 2 years ago, which literally 200 yards from me, 200 metres from my house. And if I use the pavement on one side, I can't go. I can't wheel there in my wheelchair. If I use the pavement on the other side, it's absolutely fine. But, you know, how ridiculous that it is, that much of a, you know, if it was a super busy road and I didn't have a way of crossing it, which is not the case, but if it was, and I was stuck to using one side of the pavement, literally I could not go to my local chemist in my wheelchair.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So, you know, it can be as simple as that. I mean, that's just because there's about six or seven driveways and they're really steep. I don't know why. So, you know, those pavements could be flat, you know, made flat for pedestrians, and the cars could go up the steepness because they've got an engine. That's what they're for. Why make pedestrians go up and down and up and down and up and down again? Most pedestrians don't realize they're doing that. If you're in a wheelchair, it's a nightmare. It can be really a barrier. So it can be as simple as saying, aha, we will, you know, make this bit of your local neighbourhood accessible to you, and then that might mean that actually you're now able to do a little bit, you know, if that person is happy and is equipped, has got a good wheelchair to be able to do that 200 yards, whatever, down to the local shop, they might actually be really pleased that suddenly, for the first time, they don't have to take a car or wait for somebody to pick them up to go 200 yards down the road. Because it may well be that the barrier wasn't that there's too much traffic, but simply that there is not a cut curb, a dropped curb, which means they can go to that. So if you can't go to your local shop just because there is no cut curb at the end of the block, and suddenly people say, oh, we're going to lower the traffic on your street and we're going to repair all these ridiculous accessibility fails, which we've now realised are there, they could well be a lot of older people, disabled people who are very pro LTNs, but it's got to go hand in hand. You can't just do the easy stuff and put a couple of planters. You've got to talk to your local residents, bring them with you, and learn from them what their experience of mobility is in their local area.
Yeah, made me think. I'm not sure if you saw that tweet going around about Soho, and it was a, you know, they were using a teenager's wheelchair.
Yep, tiny little wheelchair.
Yeah,
yep. Yeah, still couldn't navigate. No. You know. The pavements and the streets.
No. So, you know, it's fine to put tables and chairs in the middle of the road if you've got free pavements to move along. Yeah. But if you put tables and chairs on the pavement as well as in the middle of the road, and there has been no... I mean, I cannot even start to comprehend that the local authority would let that happen. But anyway, it did. It has now met with Transport for All, and they have a commitment now for them to properly enforce their... You know, make... make proper use of their licensing authority and duties and regain control over the pavements. But, I mean, this is not the Wild West, for goodness sake. It's central London.
Mm. You'd think, right? You know. Yeah, you'd think central London, mm-hmm. you know, a place, you know, tourism, and you just want people there. You want people mm-hmm. being able to move around.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
They should close the roads. I still don't understand why they keep the roads open.
Yeah.
Force people to move yes. their tables onto the pavement, and then you just... Why are we letting cars in to central London?
Yeah,
you do need, you know, you need to be able to have refuse collection.
Yeah.
You need to have emergency yeah. services, and a few disabled people will need to be driven through, and to be dropped off or to park. But that's still a very small amount of traffic in a big capital city. So, yeah, we need to get a grip. And then many more people who currently do not dare cycle, many of whom will be disabled people, but plenty of others, will start, you know, it'll be then worth equipment. So for me, for example, now that I know I can access, you know, places much further away than just my work, 2.5 miles away, it's absolutely worth my while, you know, thinking about investing in an even better bike, a cycle. Do you see? I use it myself, hand cycle, and you know, I need to sort out storage rather than have it in the house and ask somebody else to move it out of the house. At the moment, it's a bit of a nightmare. But anyway, but because now I can see that it is, you know, it's something that I can use daily. My poor old car, which is very old anyway, has, you know, I've had to replace the battery because it was dying on its wheels because it wasn't getting the use, which I've never, I mean, me 10, 15 years ago, I would have said, been the first one to be behind all the other people who are saying LTNs are terrible, because I would have said, if I can't drive, I can't go. And it's taken me that long, and being involved in an organisation as focused on cycling and disability as Wheels for Wellbeing is, to realise how much I could really cycle if you know, I can really cycle absolutely as a mode of transport. Pouring rain still puts me off. But other than that, I've worked out over the winter how to equip, you know, how to manage to get lights on my hand cycles. Not the easiest, but I've worked out how to do cycling in the dark. Now I'm not quite so shy about cycling in the dark. I've worked out how to cycle in the cold, which, again, trust me, if you're not moving your legs, you get really cold. I've worked out how to equip, you know, how to what to wear to be able to cycle through the winter. It's only the worst of the rain now that really puts me off. Drizzle I'll deal with. So it's only that, you know, on those days where the rain is absolutely torrential, that I might go back to saying, I'm going in my car because I don't like sitting in a bucket of wet. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
but other than that, I am so pleased that I can be physically active so much more of the time, and I'm not polluting the you know, my own atmosphere, let alone other people's neighborhoods. And disabled people, just like everybody else, have got a green conscience as well as, you know, everything else. Yeah. But it takes quite a while to get yourself equipped. I mean, think of parents and cargo bikes. It should be so easy, but no, it's not. A lot of couples, even those who cycled everywhere, didn't have a car. They have their first kid. They invest in a car because they don't know the kid exists. The cargo cycles. They don't have the space to store them. They don't have the money to invest in them. They don't realize that the upkeep of once you've invested, actually, it's very cheap to run. But, you know, it's a lot of money to find.
Yeah, it's the storage as well, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know,
they're big monsters. Yeah. But, you know, if they've managed to store a car, we need to move some of that car storage on our residential streets and turn it into cycle storage. Well, again, that's doable. But we need a lot of us having fewer cars. So we're not there yet, but it's things are changing and things are getting better. And I think attitudes are moving. So for us, convincing disabled people that they can cycle and not sounding preachy and sounding like we're saying you've got to cycle. Absolutely not. But we're saying, look, as a way of staying fit, of getting more exercise, of moving door to door. It's actually...
And giving yourself freedom as well.
Giving yourself freedom, the fun, freedom, the endorphins, all of that. it can be done. And so that's what Wheel Swirling is all about.
And now a word from our sponsors. This show is brought to you by our Third Wheels. Want to support Jenny and Alex? Become a Third Wheel supporter and help us make episodes in 2021. Give us a one-off saddle push with a donation or become a £3 a month stabilizer or a £5 a month third wheel. Visit wheelsuckerspodcast.com for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I was going to say, leading into not sounding preachy, but singing.
Oh, yes.
Do you like that segue? Do you like that segue?
Oh, lovely.
Oh. I think we might play a clip, but we love the Wheels for Wellbeing anthem.
Yeah.
If you could tell our listeners more about it.
Yes. So it, that was such fun. So my other passion when I'm not cycling, I love singing, and I sing in a couple of choirs. And
what part do you sing?
Oh, alto.
You're alto. Oh, yeah. Alto power.
Alto some of the time, tenor even more often.
Oh, so yeah. I'm in the same boat as you. I'm second alto. I'm really low.
Yeah, there you are. So with my singing friends, we've called it the Beyond the Bicycle anthem. And we have done a remake of Queen's Bicycle Races song. And if you can play a little clip, that would be so lovely. Basically, we've just rewritten the words. It was great fun, and my choir friends were game on for recording it, and we then put a little video together which was filmed at the Herne Hill Velodrome with all of our fabulous cycles.
We'll play a little clip for it now.
You say dismount, hey man, racing's just not my scene, and cycling's easier than walking. You say walk, I say ride, rumble strips, no thanks. Eyes bright above the bars, my bike wants to reach the stars. All I wanna do is bicycle, tricycle, hand cycle. I want to ride my bicycle, tricycle, hand cycle. I want to ride my trike. I want to ride my cargo bike. I want to ride my bicycles. Are not the only cycle. So rethink who can cycle. Oh yeah. Mum, dads and tots, they'll be riding today. Wheelchair users, everyone. Oh yeah.
Cool. I love I love the anthem. I mean, I love choir. I love choral singing. And was it a group effort to write the lyrics?
I ended up writing them. Once I looked at them, I thought, actually, this is quite easy. So bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. You know, it wasn't difficult to just change that. Because tricycle is the same number of syllables.
Yeah.
And hand cycle as well. And yeah. it was fabulously easy. So it was such fun. So I rewrote the words. And our amazingly talented choir director arranged the parts. And the whole choir was very happy to join in and record it. We went to recording studios in Greenwich. It was such fun.
So good.
How can people support Wheels for Wellbeing?
So if people are inspired to help Wheels for Wellbeing to support us, there are plenty of ways you could do that. So if you live in South London and you would like to volunteer at any of our cycling sessions, helping us with getting our inclusive cycling sessions ready, there's a lot of moving of big heavy bikes at the Herne Hill Velodrome or at Croydon, at the Croydon Sports Arena, or at Ladywell Day Centre. Ladywell Day Centre, we haven't restarted yet our sessions there, but we should hopefully restart in the summer, in July, very soon. At Herne Hill Velodrome and Croydon, we have restarted post-COVID, so that's all cool. So volunteering is something that people can do for us. If you don't have time, or the time that you have isn't at the time that our sessions are running, or all our session times are on our website, you could do other bits of support. You could potentially, if you're the kind of person who loves your sportives and your mad challenges, cycling challenges or otherwise, you could, if you were so minded, you could fundraise for us potentially. Get your friends to support you to do something mad. If you work for an employer who's got, say, a charity committee, for example, and they occasionally support local charities, then please, by all means, nominate us. Tell them about the amazing work that we do. Basically, we are always needing more funding. Sadly, people are happy. You know, often people are happy to give us money for buying the cycles because they realise they're expensive, and that's always very, we're very grateful for that. But we only have so much storage for those cycles. So though we do occasionally have to replace them, we pretty much have what we need. But what we do need on a regular basis is funding to pay our wonderful instructors so they can be in, can be with us supporting disabled people to cycle week in, week out. And it's a job. It's a very experienced role, and we want to be able to provide a good service and a safe cycling sessions. It also costs a lot of money to maintain our cycles. So our mechanic, fantastic person, needs paying on a regular basis because otherwise he's going to have to find a job somewhere else. So, yeah, any bits of fundraising you can do, that would be amazing. And then otherwise, if you're inspired to, if you know, say you're part of a club, a cycle club or a campaigning group, a local cycling campaign organization or group, have a read of our guide to inclusive cycling and maybe take on some of our messages and look at how you're talking about cycling. Are you talking about bicycling all the time, or
like the Americans?
Bicycling,
so weird.
Oh, I know. If you put out posters and images of cycling, can you include a trike on the poster? Not always just a tiny child on a trike, because most people understand that children use trikes, but adults also, or you know, the cool recumbents or the hand cycles, etc., so that when people see representations of cycling, they don't immediately exclude themselves because they only see bicycles. So that's another thing, the visual representation. So there's plenty of where you could be helping, and it doesn't have to be giving us money. It could be about giving us your time, or just rethinking your own campaigning and the messaging that you're putting out there. And also, if you're campaigning hard pro LTNs, for example, pro good cycling infrastructure, by all means, you know, make contact with local disabled people. Don't be disheartened or worried about talking to disabled people about cycling infrastructure. In the end, good cycling infrastructure is good mobility infrastructure, and disabled people will often benefit just as much. But they may never have thought of the fact that, you know, if we had more protected cycle lanes, for example, of main big busy roads, if they do use a mobility scooter or they use a wheelchair or you know, that they may be able to benefit from using the cycle lane, which we call mobility lanes, rather than struggle on the pavements, which are so rubbish. And also visually impaired people often are a little bit worried about cyclists, but actually the more protected infrastructure there is, good infrastructure on the carriageway, the fewer cyclists will be tempted to whiz along the pavement. So actually, I think, you know, I'm really keen that we all manage to work together to build a consensus for good cycling and other mobility infrastructure on the carriageway, as well as pushing for improvements to pavements and footways for pedestrians, whether older people or visually impaired people or people in, who use wheelchairs, and the parents pushing the buggies, etc., on the pavement. So, yeah, that's it. I think we can all work together, but we have to hear each other, listen to each other, learn from each other, and, just get off Twitter and all our high horses and just meet our neighbours.
Get off Twitter. Everybody listening, get off Twitter.
Absolutely, for everybody's sake. Well, I found my I actually quite love Twitter, but I
was going to say,
Twitter is all right. Actually, I'll take that back. But I hate Nextdoor. Nextdoor is my newest pet hate.
Uh oh,
it's so vile. Sorry, so many people being so nasty.
Oh, is that the like? I don't know. It's an app, isn't it, to kind of connect with your
neighbours potentially.
It's like a cursed
opposite.
Yeah, it's like a cursed Facebook where you just get connected with.
Yeah.
It's not great. It's very hard to have a sane conversation on there.
Oh, but no.
Hey, you know, the more sane people go on it, I guess, the better. But yeah. Sorry, sane is a very bad word to use. Just non-confrontational. It's a bit scary out there. But all social media, and they evolve, so they might get better. Low-traffic neighbourhoods have not done very, very much for unifying neighbourhoods, actually, mainly because they were a bit too sudden. I don't think there's anything wrong with them as per se, but too many of them sprung up all around the place because the government asked local authorities to do so, of course. But they were a little bit of a shock to the system.
Yeah, so change is scary.
Change and a lot of it at the same time, very scary. So people like to be heard and they don't like to be sort of faced with fait accompli and a complete change of scene. So, yeah, we'll hopefully survive it and we won't lose all of them to people taking councils to court and winning, hopefully, because that would be a disaster. That would be throwing the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Cool. So lovely to talk to you both.
Yeah. Where can we find you? You're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. Yeah. So my organisation is Wheels4Well, WELL. So Wheels for Well is that's Wheels for Well being on Twitter and on Facebook and on Instagram. And me personally, it's at Isabel Clement, Clement, no S.
I saw a tweet the other day that was like, does everybody just spell their surname?
Yeah.
Like, you say your first name and I always immediately spell my surname.
Yes. I mean, Gwizdowski, yes.
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 Yeah, because I'm a Davis, no E.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Clement is a French surname, and it's so common in France. But here, it's Clements. And people just will always put an S, and that doesn't work.
Yeah, you learn the things that people just always do.
Yeah. And Isabel, that people will put an O or no double L or put an A at the end. So that's why I always spell it as well.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Isabel.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
We have retreated to the comfort of our homes to digitally record the Wheelsuckers podcast, which is now edited by Wardour Studios. Wardour have remained strong, providing professional recordings and editing in these unusual times. Let their team of engineers, producers and composers be your guide. Visit wardourstudios.co.uk for more.
Alex and I really love what we're doing and we want to continue, but we can't do it without your help. Become a third wheel and support us today. You'll be in good company with these third wheels: Aurelia Venschelweite, Karina Fussell, Kirsty Chestnut, Sally Bremner, Jonathan Rothwell, Annie McCarthy, Max Meyer, Ben Spala, Luke Rocher, Jenny Raphael, Ciclista Zine, Ella Bori, and Kirwan Lister.
If you like what we do, squish that
like
button,
rate
us on iTunes, and
subscribe.
If you can't give us your money,
give us your stars.
Shh, don't keep us a secret. Slam that
share
button and tell all your friends about our show.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.